I'm Susie Welch, the host of Becoming You, a podcast where I help you stop living by default and start living by design. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
It is an absolute honor to be the host of 92.3 The Fan's Night Show on such an important day in our country's history. NFL trade deadline day. That's right. NFL trade deadline day. It came. It went. The Browns made a move. What? Oh, that's not what you thought I was talking about? All right, let me take it back. An important day in our country. The first round of the college football playoff rankings happening as we speak. We got it on here in studio. It's going to come down, and we'll see where Ohio State is at. Can't wait to talk about it with you guys coming up here this hour. Is there anything else important going on today? I don't know. I really don't. 216-474-0092. We do have a fun show planned. Speaking of that other thing going on today, I do have a topic for you to get into. No, it is not going to be a divisive topic. It is not going to be strictly about your political beliefs. But it'll hopefully get some laughs out of people. We'll get to that coming up much later in the show. We have Darrell Ryder, 8 o'clock. We have Nick Shook, NFL.com, going to join us at 9 to survey the landscape of both the Cleveland Browns and the NFL at large. What could play out from here? What's going to happen with Aaron Rodgers at the end of the season? Is he going to retire? All kinds of different questions that we have for Nick, especially centered around the Browns. But we'll get to all those things coming up. 216-474-0092 on X at Spencito _. Guys, I had to, and I promise you, by the way, we will get you live reaction. This is basically going to be like a mini version of Sons of the Shoe, because when the playoff rankings come out, which again is going to be unfolding here as we speak, I will give you some live reaction to wherever Ohio State is and we can talk about it together. But before we get to that, today was kind of a sobering day as we watched the trade deadline sort of come to pass. And the one move that the Browns make, only move that the Browns make in terms of a trade, other than the Amari Cooper one, of course, was trading Za'Darius Smith, which we all kind of saw coming for several weeks. And then during the game, there was reports from Mike Florio that it was going to happen anyway, so we all kind of saw this coming. He really hurried to get himself out of the locker room that night on Sunday, and I think that kind of spelled that the writing was on the wall for him. So we kind of expected it. But to have it actually happen, like, it was unfortunate, man. Like, I found myself reconciling with my own feelings about this Browns team and this Browns season and just being so upset with the way that this has gone. Like, Za'Darius Smith represented the best of this team. And what I mean by that is, like, it was a guy who you traded for, came in, he did all the right things, he said all the right things, he was unselfish, which you have to do when you're playing opposite of Myles Garrett. I mean, we remember one of the guys who played opposite of Myles Garrett who wasn't really as unselfish as we thought, Jadeveon Clowney, because when push came to shove and he was on his way out of town, he basically threw everybody under the bus and said, they weren't drawing a place for me, they were only drawing a place for Miles. And it was like, well, yeah, Myles Garrett is a Hall of Fame defensive end, one of the greatest generational players of our time. Of course they want him to be sort of the focal point of the team's pass rush. Like, what the hell are you talking about? And so there was a selfishness to Jadeveon Clowney. You had the perfect guy in Za'Darius Smith to come in, bring some positive vibes to the team, be a leader in that locker room, a vocal, energetic personality that guys certainly leaned on and fed off of and all those different things. And he was unselfish about letting Miles kind of eat, and he was in sort of the supporting role. I think we saw some of that last year where really, though, like they helped each other. They were mutually beneficial to each other because Myles Garrett getting double team often opened him up for plays, and he missed some of those plays last year. He wasn't getting the sack numbers like you're used to, but this year he was having a really good season, and Miles conversely, like, not even conversely, like, Miles was also playing well with him opposite of him on the defensive line, and Like, we you know, the reason you bring him back as his deal expired at the end of the 2023 campaign was to keep that pairing together and have that group sort of be leading the way on a team that you thought had a chance to legitimately make a deep playoff run or make a run to the Super Bowl, of all things. Like, there was a real belief that this team was there and that this team had a chance to be in that conversation with the roster that was here and the playmakers on it, and Za'Darius was part of that. And so today, we all kind of expected this, like I said. It's not that it took me by surprise. It's not that I was caught off guard or anything like that. Again, we knew this was likely going to happen. It just sucks that we're here. That was kind of my realization today. I mean, the Browns, by the way, were one of the biggest advocates at the Combine last year when the owners all get together and they talk about rule changes and proposals and all these different things. The Browns were one of the biggest advocates for pushing the trade deadline back because they thought, like, oh, this could be a chance for, like, more movement as teams kind of know more about where they're at in their season, if they can sell, if they can buy. And we all, I think they did that with the intention of, like, they would maybe be a team that was buyers this year. Oh, man, at the trade deadline, there might be some teams that are selling off parts and you need a piece. So sign us up for trying to add to the roster on November 5th this year. And it just sucks that the complete opposite happened. And the Browns are sitting here at 2-7 and basically pivoting to 2025 and the NFL draft in 2025 and the 2025 season. And we all have to have conversations about, like, how you navigate the Deshaun Watson situation and the Deshaun Watson contract from here, knowing that it's this albatross of a thing that's going to loom over your salary cap books for years to come now. It just stinks. It flat out stinks that this is where we're at. And like, I look back, it's amazing how many different things went wrong with this team. It was the offensive line just regressing immensely in front of our eyes. And maybe we were naive to think that losing Bill Callahan wouldn't have the impact that it seems like it has. And that Andy Dickerson, I felt like Andy Dickerson, he was regarded pretty highly around this league, was going to be fine in that role, and that the you wouldn't see this major drop off the way that we have. I mean, like, that was a miss on our part. Amari Cooper, like, if we go back to the Brandon Ayuk conversation in August, we were all sitting, like, there were so many different angles to that story. And from the start, I never blamed the Browns for exploring that. I said from that point on, like, I get what they're doing here. If you're going to pay a wide receiver, you're not going to pay one who's in his 30s. You're going to pay the guy who is in his mid-20s, still a rising star in this league, and gives you a chance to, like, invest in something for the future at that position specifically. So I understood their interest in Brandon Ayuk, and I didn't have a problem with it, even though it may be disgruntled Amari Cooper, who was obviously a fan favorite and a guy that we all admired because he always did the right thing. He showed up to work with his hard hat on and went to work. Great. There was plenty of reasons to like Amari Cooper, but I understood that back then. And like, how those conversations would have, if we could have seen into the future and seen Amari Cooper dropping passes and admitting to the media that he just wasn't practicing hard enough at the beginning of the season and how he had to change his approach to things. Like, if we had a crystal ball to see that, we might have all been on board with, like, hey, you know what? Maybe we should trade for Brandon Ayuk. Everybody would have been in the same camp of, yeah, we love Amari Cooper, but it might be time to move on if that's the results we're going to get. So we kind of got that wrong. And then the quarterback situation, some of us are wrong about it. Some of us are right about it. I was always in the middle. I had high hopes for Deshaun Watson when he came here in the beginning. And I liked the thought process behind trying to get a franchise quarterback. Now I think we can fully sit here and say, like, it was the wrong decision and they shouldn't have made that move in the first place. And you know, buyer's remorse galore. It's been a disaster. But, like, I didn't expect him to be, I guess, this bad. From the like, I thought there could be some rust. I thought there could be these different things. As bad as he's been, I mean, it's a disaster, and I don't know that any of us really saw this coming. Maybe some of us saw this coming, but we're at the point where we have to admit that it's just a they got it wrong. They did. And so you throw all that together in a pot, and you get a 2-7 season where there were so many expectations and so many high hopes. And yeah, like, we're all going to be sitting here pointing the finger at different people as to who should take the blame for this. But it just sucks that turning the calendar to November, this is where we're at. And we can't have conversations about meaningful games potentially in December against the Steelers and the Broncos and the Bengals and the Dolphins and the Chiefs. Instead, we're talking about a team that... Instead, we're sitting here talking about a team that's pretty much out of the playoff picture, and it's in the words of Bill, it's to sort of quote Bill Belichick, it's on the 2025. It just sucks. 216-474-0092. The trading of Za'Darius Smith, did it reopen some of these wounds for you as you reflected on a Brown season that clearly has not gone as planned? And I also want to know from you guys, was trading Za'Darius Smith enough? Did you expect them to do more today? Because we had calls from across this town, from across this fan base, of people who were chiming in saying they got to blow it up and do a fire sale and trade everybody. I don't think that was ever in the cards. I'll explain why coming up. We'll also play you some audio. Zach Jackson was on the morning show today from The Athletic. Had some interesting things to say about the state of the Browns and the trade deadline and whatnot. So we'll get to that coming up here, as well as my thoughts on it. But I still think there were some moves that they could have made and maybe were left on the table. Did you think the Browns are going to do more? Should they have done more at the deadline today? We'll get your thoughts on that. Hit me up on Twitter as well, @Spencito_. College football playoff rankings coming out as we speak. No Ohio State there yet. They're at number 10 on the list as they count down. So when we get back from this break, we'll know where Ohio State is. We'll talk about that as well. Keep it locked. Spencer German with you here on 92.3 The Fan. Well, it's official. We now know who the new top four teams in the country are. Do we like the like alluding to the election results, but not actually talking about the election results? Is that going to be a funny bit the rest of the night? No, guys, we do have a new top 25, the first iteration of the college football playoff rankings are officially out. I will talk about them here momentarily. I do want to get to a couple calls that are the couple callers that are sort of on hold here who wanted to talk about the Browns, like we led off with, obviously. So we will get to that here coming up. But based off of the rankings, I mean, the way it's set up right now, it makes a ton of sense because they're ranking them based off of the conference champs. And, oh wait, actually, so the way to explain this, the seeds are different than what their actual rank is. So Ohio State is actually the number two team in the country right now, behind only Oregon, who's obviously their one loss. But if the playoff started today, they would be the fifth seed in the tournament because they're going off of who the conference champs are. And so they would be slated to play Boise State, which we were just talking about would be an awesome game. I want to dissect this more with you. Give me a second. Let me go real quickly here to Todd. Todd, what's going on, man?
Okay, so Hutchins is a bona fide, reliable first rounder. Isn't that correct prior to injury for the Lions? Isn't that right?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's probably on like a trajectory like that, yeah.
Solid pick. On a team that already had a pretty strong line there, okay? And the most they were willing to give up is a fifth-round pick when they are in a rush for the Super Bowl, which they're in the top three best teams, and I would say they're the number one contender. But they're in the top three best teams, and all the Browns could get back was a fifth round. So your question is, did the Browns need to do more? Yes. Yes. Smith was too well needed for a team that was too pressed to get somebody like Smith because they are truly the number one contender in my mind, no less than the top three. And they just – what happened, man? What's going on?
So, Todd, I'll explain it like this. I feel like the reason they didn't get a good haul, or at least a fourth-round pick for Za'Darius, it felt like to me it was just about the market. Like, I'm sure the Browns pushed for a fourth. I'm sure that's what they wanted. But there was reporting said today about how basically the Lions, like, waited him out. The Lions were like, well, if nobody else is going to call you on Za'Darius Smith, we're not going to give you a fourth. And because there wasn't a market there, if the Browns were set on, like, we need to just move on, we need to trade this guy and get the picks for him, then they had to probably settle for less than what they wanted. I think that's what it kind of came down to here. And a lot of times the market does sort of dictate these trades, unfortunately.
They should have been like, we'll bump y'all in. He's going to stay here. We ain't running no sucker game in Cleveland, but apparently... but apparently, that was a bad trade.
Yeah. Well, and I get it too, Todd, because generally Andrew Berry, like, there's a lot of criticisms with his draft picks, of course. But generally Andrew Berry, like, we walk away feeling like he wins these trades, and that's why everybody does the laser eyes emoji or the laser eye meme of Andrew Berry, because they think that he just fleeces teams. But today was definitely a day where it wasn't really it was the opposite. It was the Browns not getting remotely what you thought Za'Darius Smith was actually worth.
On the 5th of November, remember this, the fifth round pick that the Browns got won't even be on the team by the fourth game next year.
Probably not. Unless it's a quarterback, I guess, like a backup quarterback.
It's not going to be a backup quarterback. And Smith's going to the Super Bowl. Man. Anyway.
Don't you feel good for him, though? Wouldn't you feel good if Za'Darius Smith got a ring?
I don't know him. No, I feel good for him if he got a ring and he was on the Cleveland Browns team. Yeah, of course I would.
I love the pettiness.
I'm done with it, man.
Appreciate you, man.
All right.
Yep, thanks, Todd. Good stuff. I always appreciate Todd calling in. Guys, we will get back to some of this Browns conversation, especially when we catch up with Darryl Ryder top of the hour. But we need to react to the first iteration of the college football playoff rankings. They are out. They are glorious. And your Ohio State Buckeyes, let's just call this the Sons of the Shoe portion of the show. We're basically doing like a mock version of what I'd be talking about on our spontaneous episode of Sons of the Shoe after the first ranking comes out, like we tended to do last year. But Ohio State is the number, and this is an important distinction to make, because where they're ranked and where they would be in the seeding of the bracket are two very different things. So keep that in mind here. Based on the rankings, they are number two in the country. Number one, obviously, Oregon, the only team that's beaten Ohio State to this point. They have them ahead of Georgia, who is three. The Miami Hurricanes, who are undefeated right now in the ACC, are four. Texas is five. We'll just start right at the top 10 here for you at least. Penn State 6, Tennessee 7, Indiana 8, BYU 9, Notre Dame 10. I'll give you two more here just kind of for fun. Alabama is 11, so they would be in the playoff field. And then Boise State is 12. And that's kind of what makes up your playoff field at this point. Now, again, like I said, you got to remember that the top four seeds in the bracket, not your top four teams in terms of the rankings, your top four seeds in the bracket go to your conference winners. And so the first version of the bracket that they put out had the four byes going to Oregon, who is right now a conference leader, Miami, who's a conference leader, Georgia, who's a conference leader, and BYU, who is a conference leader. So understanding that, Ohio State is the next highest ranked team, so they are the fifth seed in the bracket and would be slated to play Boise State if the playoff started today. We know the playoff doesn't start today, but that's what it would be. Your other matchups would be Indiana versus Tennessee, which I actually think would be a lot of fun. Alabama versus Texas, that's a hell of a matchup. And then probably my favorite first-round matchup would be Notre Dame versus Penn State. Sign me up for Notre Dame versus Penn State. That's like a classic, old-school, first, you know, playoff-style matchup that I would love to see. Ohio State-Boise State, though, that's a matchup you wouldn't want to sleep on. I actually would be a little bit nervous about playing Boise State, because Boise State is no slouch of a team. They pushed Oregon like Ohio State did to the brink earlier this season, Ashton Jeanty is absolutely incredible. I mean, that guy might come for like Barry Sanders records. He's so ridiculous. So yeah, now that would be at Ohio State though. That is the key thing. But that is your first iteration of the college football playoff. I don't know. Like, I think a lot of this makes sense, or really like most of it makes sense. I am a little bit surprised though that Ohio State was put ahead of Georgia. I think the logic behind it has to be their only loss is to Oregon, and it was a 1-point loss on the road at their house with some fluky things kind of happening, like an onside kick for Oregon that they recover, and the weird 12 men on the field that ran some time off the clock penalty. So, like, in theory, I understand sort of the logic there of being like, well, hey, Ohio State's only loss is to the number one team in the country. They also just beat Penn State this weekend, who is a top-ranked team. So we're going to sort of reward them for what they've done at this point. But and I get it, like, Georgia's loss is to Alabama, and they did struggle with Florida a little bit this weekend. But a week ago, Ohio State was struggling with Nebraska, who isn't obviously anywhere near the top 25 either. So I find that somewhat interesting. I'm okay with it. I'm not going to complain about Ohio State being two. But I just thought, like, Georgia, here's the thing with Georgia. Georgia is a team that it feels like you can almost always trust when you get to the playoff, when you get to that time of year, because of who their coach is and because you know they have the talent. And so, like, and as much as Ohio State is a brand that I think somewhat has like a trust value to it, I just think people tend to trust Georgia more. And I think that's fair because Ohio State tends to fall short in like those biggest moments. But if you're just going off of what they've done so far, I obviously understand why Ohio State is where they are. What's funny about Miami deserves to be in the top five, in my opinion, and they think they're probably fine being four. I think that's a good spot for them, especially being undefeated. But I can't help but just feel like at some point Miami's going to Miami a game. Tell me I'm not the only person who feels this way. I know there's other people out there who feel that Miami at some point is just going to do the Miami thing where late in the game, Mario Cristobal does something absolutely stupid and cost them the win, or Cam Ward, who has been phenomenal, and I really wish was the Ohio State quarterback. I don't know why they didn't invest more money in him from the NIL. Way to go, guys. No offense to Will Howard, but I mean, come on. Cam Ward's lighting it up out there. Or Cam Ward's going to like throw a pick at an untimely time and it's going to cost him a game. I mean, for a while, Duke was going toe-to-toe with them this weekend. Like, I think they're going to make it out of the ACC, and the ACC theoretically could still get two teams in if things fall a certain way, obviously. But man, like, I just can't help but wonder if like Miami at some point is going to stumble. Every week I go into it like Miami should win this game, but I wouldn't be surprised if they stubbed their toe in a big way, because that just of late that's been the thing that Miami tends to do. This ranking obviously also shows you that they still put a lot of value in the SEC. Texas A&M did itself no favors by losing this weekend. They're now 14th and out of the playoff picture at the moment. They're the second team, or the first team out, whatever you want to say. I guess the second team out. But like, you have Texas in there, you have Georgia in there, you have Tennessee in there, you have Alabama in there as things stand right now. So four SEC teams getting the nod, four Big Ten teams. So the conversations about like those conferences basically getting like the nod here as the two sort of supreme conferences now in college football have been, it, like, obviously that is coming to fruition. That is 100% true in terms of how this playoff is playing itself out to this point. Did the College Football Playoff Ranking Committee get this right? Obviously, I think most of us are going to say we're pretty happy with where Ohio State is at. And actually, they're on ESPN right now. They're kind of walking through some of these things. And Ohio State has like the 19th hardest strength of schedule versus Georgia, who has the first hardest strength of schedule. So that's another reason why, again, I'm kind of surprised that they're ahead of Georgia. Again, not complaining, but it is just a little bit surprising that Georgia got jumped by Ohio State because of their win over Penn State this weekend. And I listen, that Indiana team is a great story. The fact that they're 8 and they're very much in the picture right now is kind of a lot of fun. I hope that Indiana team makes it, because they do feel like a team that could like take somebody by surprise in the first round of the playoff and upset them. Hopefully it wouldn't be Ohio State, but I like that Indiana story a lot. But yeah, 4 Big Ten teams in the top 8. All of them in the playoff, Ohio State to 2. Your thoughts on the first iteration of the College Football Playoff ranking, you can jump in on X at Spencito _, where you can hit me up, or you can call us up, 216-474-0092. I thought that was a good sidebar, good conversation. I do want to get back to the Browns, though, and ask you guys, revisit the question. Should the Browns have been doing more at the trade deadline? Should they have made more trades than they did? Who did you want to see shopped? And I'll explain why there was just no way that somebody like Myles Garrett was ever getting traded today. We'll do all that next. We got Daryl Ryder, 8 o'clock. It's Spencer German with you, 92 through the Fan. Were you expecting the Browns to do more at the trade deadline? 216-474-0092. I'm going to be honest, like, I said this a couple times, maybe in lesser words, but I just don't think the NFL trade deadline was ever built for fire sales. And so all these people who like wanted Myles Garrett gone and just get as many picks as possible. Like there's a couple things here. A, it was never going to happen because finding a player like Myles Garrett is like one in a million. I mean, there's probably no player in this draft who is comparable to Myles Garrett. I mean, this is a generational talent. You don't just trade that player because you're having a bad season and you feel sorry for yourself. I mean, what are we doing here? So there's that. There's also the fact that, again, like fire sales aren't really a thing in the NFL. You don't just trade guys and then like you can call up somebody from AAA to fill their spot in the roster. Like it doesn't work that way. I also just think too, and maybe this is the biggest point, and I was talking about this with somebody earlier on social media. Like I understand that Browns fans have had so many reasons over the years to like give up on this franchise and team. I mean, they had their team taken away, and I know like this fan base more than maybe any other appreciates their team the most because they had it taken away from them at one point, and it was devastating. Like this city loves the Browns. This area loves the Browns. And so I know most of you don't take that for granted. But I've been kind of saying, and this year, because of the Deshaun Watson situation, I've never sensed in all the years that I've lived in Cleveland, both during college and afterwards, I have never sensed the lethargic feeling that it seems this fan base has for this team this year than any other year of my existence as a person in Cleveland, like as a citizen of Cleveland. It's never felt this way, ever. Like, morale is at an all-time low. Fans need something to latch on to, and Myles Garrett is one of those things. You know, like trading Myles Garrett would have just given people more reason not to support this team. After you made this Deshaun Watson deal, it hasn't worked out, and it's basically now a concession that it hasn't worked out. You need things to feel good about. You need selling points for this team, especially as you transition from your downtown stadium to this new state-of-the-art facility that you're hoping to sell to people in the community. Like, you need people to believe in something with this team. You just do. And so you don't trade somebody like Myles Garrett when morale is at an all-time low. You just don't do it. It was never going to happen, guys. And so if you call in and you say, like, I thought they were going to do more and trade everybody, like, I just don't think that was ever in the cards. I've said it before. It may not be the clearest route, and it might not be the easiest route. But even with the Deshaun Watson thing looming large and the contract he has as this albatross over the organization's cap, there is still a way where you can draft a quarterback, and if you pick the right one and you sort of reshuffle the offensive line a little bit and find some value and some players there, that you can still maybe be a competitive team and still try to maximize the talent that you have in your roster that is still in its prime. It doesn't have to just be like blow it all up and start over. Like some, I get why that's the easy thing to jump to when things aren't going your way and it's been a season from hell, but it doesn't have to be that way. And so I was never in favor of that, and I never thought that was going to be the case. I guess I will say, I thought there would be more movement than what we saw. Za'Darius Smith was an obvious one. I think we all kind of anticipated that. I thought Greg Newsome could be in play, and there was some talk this week leading up to the deadline that he could be on the move. David Njoku, when that was reported by Mike Florio, it was, I don't know, I wouldn't say it was surprising, but I understand where that kind of came from. He's not having a great year. He's really not. But, like, there is... I just don't think they were ever going to trade Myles Garrett. I don't think that was ever in the cards. There were some names, and clearly the value wasn't there for all these players, and so they largely stood pat, other than trading Za'Darius Smith and moving on, parting ways, releasing defensive tackle Quentin Jefferson, which, okay, guy had been a healthy scratch the last 4 weeks, so whatever. Were you surprised the Browns didn't do more at the trade deadline? Let's go to the phones. BP and Pepper Pike, you're up next. What's up, BP?
Hold on 1 second. Hey, Spencer, how you doing, man?
Good, what's up?
Well, you know, I thought I'd give you a Browns thought and then I'd give you a positive note on the Cavs, if I could. But I'm glad the Browns didn't do anything crazy. You know, the station was reporting, you know, guys like David Njoku and maybe Greg Newsome. But, you know, these are, you know, first-round draft picks. They're hard to come by. You know, it took years of the Browns sort of tanking to, you know, build up this roster, you know, with guys like Njoku and Myles Garrett. And I just don't want to blow it all up. I mean, I think the Browns, though, I mean, you could do like a Harvard case study on how to fix this team because I don't even know where to start. You know, it's not – we thought maybe it was just the quarterback, but it's so many different facets of the team. Or
yeah.
Even Nick Chubb. Nick Chubb could be broken, and we don't even know what we got with Nick Chubb. You know, I mean, he's only averaging 2.5 yards a carry, basically. So, you know, I don't even know. To be honest, it's so complicated. But my biggest point with the Browns is I just think I would like to see them move away from Paul DePodesta. To me, he's almost like the common denominator of all. He's the guy who's been here since 1-15 and 0-16.
Well, here's the thing, BP, and I think that's a fair point. Like, if John Dorsey got canned because his biggest flaw, his fatal flaw was hiring Freddie Kitchens, then if Paul DePodesta was Mr. Go Out and Get Deshaun Watson, I feel like shouldn't he be fired for that? Like, isn't that his move? Or if they decide Kevin Stefanski's not the right coach, well, guess what? That means he hired a coach that also failed because they didn't get the right quarterback for him. So, yeah, like, I think there needs to be
accountability.
Somebody is going to get fired, I think, at the end of the season for this. I don't know who it is, but I think somebody's getting fired at the end of the season for this. We'll find out more as the season plays out, but I definitely think, like, all of us question what Paul DePodesta does on a daily basis. I have no idea. You have no idea. Nobody has any idea. So, right. Yeah, like, and yeah, the idea that like I think you're onto it, man. Like, this season's just gone completely up in flames and in a completely different direction than any of us anticipated. None of us thought this offensive line was going to just deteriorate the way it did. Nobody thought Amari Cooper was going to be bad and drop all those passes. Like, it's just been it's nobody
right.
predicted this. It's sad and unfortunate, man, because there was so much hope for this season, even with sort of the difficult realization of or even with the difficult situation that is Deshaun Watson, there was still a lot of hope with this team.
And, you know, you look at the, like, even the special teams have been really bad this year. You know, really bad. Like, we've been burned on that kickoff. I knew once that Bengals scored that kickoff return, I knew the game was over. We couldn't overcome that. You know, just like the Browns don't have enough talent to overcome these, you know, pick sixes or kickoff returns or big punt returns or missed field goals. It's just such a fine line. But I'm really concerned about this team because I don't even know how you fix this. I don't – like, the Washington Commanders kind of turned their team around with a new coach and with a new quarterback.
And a new owner.
Yeah, and it's almost like that's kind of what – I hate to say it, but, You know, that would look good around here, you know, if we could do all that. But and real quick on the Cavs, I believe on a good note, you know, the Cavs are looking fantastic. I've been a lifelong Cavs fan, and, like, this is the best start they've ever got off to. And I think tomorrow they're going to set the record at 9-0 because, actually, New Orleans has a bunch of guys injured on their injured report.
They do, you're right.
Yeah, in fact, Zion might be out for tomorrow. He didn't play the last two games. So if Zion Williamson is out, that's pretty much a guaranteed win for us.
No doubt. Appreciate the call, BP. Yeah, listen, I'm going to talk Cavs here coming up because I think a lot of you guys owe this man an apology. But also, Cavs may never lose again. They might just go 80. They might just mess around and go 82-0. Just saying. We are going to get the Daryl Ryder coming up. I want to play this clip from earlier today. Zach Jackson of The Athletic. He joined Ken and Lima because now that the trade deadline's passed, the Browns made their one move. The question from here goes, like, how do you navigate out of this? And it's something I want to talk about with Daryl coming up. But Zach Jackson talked about where the Browns are at, and here's what he had to say.
The offensive line this year, specifically the tackle thing, it just really sunk them from the start. And Jed Wills is due $11.8 in dead money next year, but doesn't have a contract. And now doesn't have a starting job. So, I mean, that just goes to the whole thing of right now this is not a well-built team or a well-coached team. But the decisions that are going to be made with this roster and, like, the delusion that's out there that it's a quick fix based on this dead money and these guys who are no longer ascending or don't have contracts at all or don't have contracts but have dead money, like, this is in bad shape, guys.
This is where the kicking the can down the road is going to backfire on the Browns because they thought they had a longer leash with Deshaun Watson as their quarterback, and that has obviously since been proven otherwise. And so now, to Zach's point, you got people like Jedrick Wills who probably aren't going to be here next year, but you're still going to owe $11 million to. Like, this is it's a problem. It is. And you're going to be paying Deshaun Watson either to be on the roster as a backup or just not show up to the facility and not be around the team anymore. Whatever the case may be, or maybe they're going to chart him out as a starter and try this all over again, and they'll blow smoke up our asses and tell us that the fourth time around it'll work with Deshaun Watson, and a new offensive coordinator will get him going on the right track, and they finally figured out the rest of, like, I've never seen a quarterback that needed so much to go right around him for him to get back to being an elite level quarterback that he used to be not so long ago. Like, it's ridiculous. But if they do that, we'll all see right through it. We'll all know the truth. And it'll be another season that just feels like it's a waste. So I hope we don't do that. I really do hope we don't. And it's not a clear, as Zach laid out, there's a lot of reasons why the path to the playoffs or the path back to relevancy, the path back to being a Super Bowl contending team is not so clear, and it is very ominous, and it feels like a dark cloud hanging over the organization. But as I've said, you can fix a lot if you land on the right quarterback. That might be easier said than done, but if they can land the right guy and they do some things right in the draft and they figure that out, maybe, just maybe, they can make us forget about all the problems that this team has cap-wise and the Deshaun Watson experience and all these different things. The question then becomes, do you trust everybody in power right now to lead that charge and lead you out of this dilapidated state that the franchise clearly is in right now? And that is a conversation that we'll have to get to a little bit later in the show. We talked to Daryl Ryder, our Browns insider. He'll join us coming up. Also in the 8 o'clock hour, guys, a lot of you owe this man an apology. We'll get to Off the Beaten Path later in the show. We also, you can wear your sticker, but I don't need to see it on my feed. We'll talk about that coming up. It's Spencer German with you here on the Night Show. 92.3 The Fan, 1 hour down. We got three to go together here on this election night, Tuesday, trade deadline night, Tuesday. A lot of fun still in store. Keep it locked.
History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. Join me, Professor Greg Jackson, for History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast. Available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.